Chapter 11. In this woeful plight, moneyless, wifeless, horseless, corporless, with a gag in his mouth, and a rope round his body, are we compelled to leave the gallant Galgenstein, until his friends and the progress of this history shall deliver him from his durance. Mr. Brock's adventures on the captain's horse must likewise be pretermited, for it is our business to follow Mrs. Catherine through the window by which she made her escape, and among the various chances that befell her. As he had one cause to congratulate herself, that as he had not her baby at her back, for the infant was safely housed under the care of a nurse, to whom the captain was answerable. Beyond this her prospects were but dismal. No home to fly to, but a few shillings in her pocket, and a whole heap of injuries, and dark revengeful thoughts in her bosom. It was a sad task to her to look either backwards or forwards. Whither was she to fly? How to live? What good chance was to befriend her? There was an angel watching over the steps of Mrs. Cat, not a good one, I think, but one of those from that unnamable place, who of their many subjects here on earth, and often are pleased to extricate them from worse perplexities. Mrs. Cat, now, had not committed murder, but as bad as murder, and as she felt not the smallest repentance in her heart as he had, in the course of her life and connection with the captain, performed and gloried in a number of wicked coquetries, idlenesses, vanities, lies, fits of anger, slanders, foul abuses, and what not, she was fairly bound over to this dark angel whom we have alluded to, and he dealt with her, and aided her, as one of his own children. I do not mean to say that, in this strait, he appeared to her in the likeness of a gentleman in black, and made her sign her name in blood to a document conveying over to him her soul, in exchange for certain conditions, to be performed by him. Such diabolical bargains have always appeared to me unworthy of the astute personage who is supposed to be one of the parties to them, and who would scarcely be fool enough to pay dearly for that which he can have in a few years for nothing. It is not, then, to be supposed that a demon of darkness appeared to Mrs. Cat, and led her into a flaming chariot harnessed by dragons, and careering through air at the rate of 1,000 leagues a minute. No such thing. The vehicle that was sent to aid her was one of a much more vulgar description. The Iverpool caravan, then, which in the year 1706 used to perform the journey between London and that place in 10 days, left Birmingham about an hour after Mrs. Catherine had quitted that town, and as she sat weeping on a hillside, and plunged in bitter meditation, the lumbering, jingling vehicle overtook her. The coachman was marching by the side of his horses, and encouraging them to maintain their pace of 2 miles an hour. The passengers had some of them left the vehicle, in order to walk up the hill, and the carriage had arrived at the top of it, and, meditating a brisk trot down the declivity, waited there until the lagging passengers should arrive. When Jehu, casting a good-natured glance upon Mrs. Catherine, asked the pretty maid whence she was come, and whether she would like a ride in his carriage. To the latter of which questions Mrs. Catherine replied truly yes. To the former, her answer was that as he had come from Stratford, whereas, as we very well know, as he had lately quitted Birmingham. Hast he seen a woman pass this way, on a black horse, with a large bag of gold over the saddle? Said Jehu, preparing to mount upon the roof of his coach. No, indeed, said Mrs. Cat. Nor a trooper on another horse after her, no? Well, there be a mortal road down Birmingham way about sich a one. She have killed, they say, 9 gentlemen at supper, and have strangled a German prince in bed. She have robbed him of 20,000 guineas, and have rode away on a black horse. That can't be I, said Mrs. Cat, naively, for I have but 3 shillings and a groat. No, it can't be he, truly, for where's your bag of gold? And, besides, he has got too pretty a face to do such wicked things as to kill 9 gentlemen and strangle a German prince. La, coachman, said Mrs. Cat, blushing archly, La, coachman, do you think so? The girl would have been pleased with a compliment even on her way to be hanged, and the parley ended by Mrs. Catherine stepping into the carriage, where there was room for 8 people at least, and where 2 or 3 individuals had already taken their places. For these Mrs. Catherine had in the first place to make a story, which she did, and a very glib one for a person of her years and education. Being asked whither she was bound, and how she came to be alone of a morning sitting by a roadside, she invented a neat history suitable to the occasion, which elicited much interest from her fellow passengers. One in particular, a young man, who had caught a glimpse of her face under her hood, was very tender in his attentions to her. But whether it was that as he had been too much fatigued by the occurrences of the past day and sleepless night, or whether the little laudanum which as he had drunk a few hours previously now began to act upon her, certain it is that Mrs. Cat now suddenly grew sick, feverish, and extraordinarily sleepy, and in this state she continued for many hours, to the pity of all her fellow travelers. At length the Erevan reached the inn, where horses and passengers were accustomed to rest for a few hours, and to dine, and Mrs. Catherine was somewhat awakened by the stir of the passengers, and the friendly voice of the inn servant welcoming them to dinner. The gentleman who had been smitten by her beauty now urged her very politely to descend, which, taking the protection of his arm, she accordingly did. He made some very gallant speeches to her as she stepped out, and she must have been very much occupied by them, or wrapped up in her own thoughts, or stupefied by sleep, fever, and opium, for she did not take any heed of the place into which she was going, which, had she done, she would probably have preferred remaining in the coach, dinnerless and ill. Indeed, the inn into which she was about to make her entrance was no other than the Oogle, from which she set forth at the commencement of this history, and which then, as now, was kept by her relative, the thrifty Mrs. Score. That good landlady, seeing a lady, in a smart hood and cloak, leaning, as if faint, upon the arm of a gentleman of good appearance, concluded them to be man and wife, and folks of quality too. And with much discrimination, as well as sympathy, led them through the public kitchen to her own private parlor, or bar, where she handed the lady an armchair, and asked what she would like to drink. By this time, and indeed at the very moment she heard her aunt's voice, Mrs. Catherine was aware of her situation, and when her companion retired, and the landlady, with much officiousness, insisted on removing her hood, she was quite prepared for the screech of surprise which Mrs. Score gave on dropping it, exclaiming, "Why, law bless us, it's our Catherine. I'm very ill, and tired, and," said Cat, "and would give the world for a few hours' sleep. A few hours and welcome, my love, and a sack posset too. You do look sadly tired and poorly, sure enough. Ah, Cat, Cat. You great ladies are sad rakes, I do believe. I wager now, that with all your balls, and carriages, and fine clothes, you are neither so happy nor so well as when you lived with your poor old aunt, who used to love you so." And with these gentle words, and an embrace or two, which Mrs. Catherine wondered at, and permitted, she was conducted to that very bed which the Count had occupied a year previously, and undressed, and laid in it, and affectionately tucked up by her aunt, who marveled at the fineness of her clothes, as she removed them piece by piece. And when she saw that in Mrs. Catherine's pocket there was only the sum of 3 and 4 pence, said, archly, there was no need of money, for the captain took care of that. Mrs. Cat did not undeceive her, and deceived Mrs. Score certainly was, for she imagined the well-dressed gentleman who led Cat from the carriage was no other than the Count, and, as he had heard, from time to time, exaggerated reports of the splendor of the establishment which he kept up, she was induced to look upon her niece with the very highest respect, and to treat her as if she were a fine lady. "And so she is a fine lady," Mrs. Score had said months ago, when some of these flattering stories reached her, and as he had overcome her first fury at Catherine's elopement. He girl was very cruel to leave me, but we must recollect that she is as good as married to a nobleman, and must all forget and forgive, you know. This speech had been made to Dr. Dobbs, who was in the habit of taking a pipe and a tankard at the Eagle, and it had been roundly reprobated by the worthy divine, who told Mrs. Score that the crime of Catherine was only the more heinous if it had been committed from interested motives, and protested that, were she a princess, he would never speak to her again. Mrs. Score thought and pronounced the doctor's opinion to be very bigoted. Indeed, she was one of those persons who have a marvelous respect for prosperity and a corresponding scorn for ill fortune. When, therefore, she returned to the public room, she went graciously to the gentleman who had led Mrs. Catherine from the carriage, and with a knowing curtsy welcomed him to the Eagle, told him that his lady would not come to dinner, but bade her say, with her best love to his lordship, that the ride had fatigued her, and that she would lie in bed for an hour or two. This speech was received with much wonder by his lordship, who was, indeed, no other than a Liverpool tailor going to London to learn fashions. But he only smiled, and did not undeceive the landlady, who herself went off, smilingly, to bustle about dinner. The 2 or 3 hours allotted to that meal by the liberal coachmasters of those days passed away, and Mr. Coachman, declaring that his horses were now rested enough, and that they had 12 miles to ride, put the steeds to, and summoned the passengers. Mrs. Score, who had seen with much satisfaction that her niece was really ill, and her fever more violent, and hoped to have her for many days an inmate in her house, now came forward, and casting upon the Liverpool tailor a look of profound but respectful melancholy, said, "My lord, for I recollect your lordship quite well, the lady upstairs is so ill that it would be a sin to move her. Had I not better tell coachman to take down your lordship's trunks, and the ladies, and make you a bed in the next room?" Very much to her surprise, this proposition was received with a roar of laughter. "Adam," said the person addressed, "I'm not a lord, but a tailor and draper, and as for that young woman, before today I never set eyes on her." "What?" screamed out Mrs. Score. "Re not you the count? Do you mean to say that you and cats? Do you mean to say that you didn't order her bed, and that you won't pay this here little bill?" And with this, she produced a document, by which the count's lady was made her debtor in a sum of half a guinea. These passionate words excited more and more laughter. "Eat, my lord," said the coachman, "and then come along, for time presses." "Our respects to her ladyship," said one passenger. "Elder my lord can't wait," said another, and with much merriment one and all quitted the hotel, entered the coach, and rattled off. Dumb pale with terror and rage bill in hand, Mrs. Score had followed the company, but when the coach disappeared, her senses returned. Back she flew into the inn, overturning the ostler, not deigning to answer Dr. Dobbs, who, from behind soft tobacco fumes, mildly asked the reason of her disturbance, and, bounding upstairs like a fury, she rushed into the room where Catherine lay. "Well, madam," said she, in her highest key, "do you mean that you have come into this here house to swindle me? Do you therefore to come with your airs here, and call yourself a nobleman's lady, and sleep in the best bed, when you're no better nor a common tramper? I'll thank you, ma'am, to get out, ma'am. I'll have no sick paupers in this house, ma'am. You know your way to the workhouse, ma'am, and there I'll trouble you for to go." And here Mrs. Score proceeded quickly to pull off the bedclothes, and poor cat arose, shivering with fright and fever. As he had no spirit to answer, as she would have done the day before, when an oath from any human being would have brought half a dozen from her in return, or a knife, or a plate, or a leg of mutton, if such had been to her hand. As he had no spirit left for such repartees, But in reply to the above words of Mrs. Gore, and a great many more of the same kind which are not necessary for our history, but which that lady uttered with inconceivable shrillness and volubility, the poor wench could say little, only sob and shiver, and gather up the clothes again, crying, "Oh, aunt, don't speak unkind to me. I'm very unhappy, and very ill. Ill, you strumpet. Ill, be hanged. Ill is as ill goes. And if you are ill, it's only what you merit. Get out. Dress yourself, tramp. Get to the workhouse, and don't come to cheat me any more. Dress yourself, do you hear? Satin petticoat forsooth, and lace to her smock. Poor, wretched, chattering, burning, shivering Catherine huddled on her clothes as well she might. She seemed hardly to know or see what she was doing, and did not reply a single word to the many that the landlady let fall. Cat tottered down the narrow stairs, and through the kitchen, and to the door, which she caught hold of, and paused a while, and looked into Mrs. Gore's face, as for one more chance. "Get out, you nasty trull," said that lady, sternly, with arms akimbo, and poor Catherine, with a most piteous scream and outgush of tears, let go of the doorpost, and staggered away into the road. Asterisk, 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 why, no, yes, no, it is poor Catherine Hall, as I live, said somebody, starting up, shoving aside Mrs. Gore very rudely, and running into the road, wig off and pipe in hand. It was honest Dr. Dobbs. And the result of his interview with Mrs. Cat was that he gave up forever smoking his pipe at the Oogle, and that she lay sick of a fever for some weeks in his house. Asterisk, 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 over this part of Mrs. Cat's history we shall be as brief as possible, for, to tell the truth, nothing immoral occurred during her whole stay at the good doctor's house, and we are not going to insult the reader by offering him silly pictures of piety, cheerfulness, good sense, and simplicity, which are milk and water virtues after all, and have no relish with them like a good strong vice, highly peppered. Well, to be short, Dr. Dobbs, though a profound theologian, was a very simple gentleman, and before Mrs. Cat had been a month in the house, he had learned to look upon her as one of the most injured and repentant characters in the world, and had, with Mrs. Dobbs, resolved many plans for the future welfare of the young Magdalen. He was but 16, my love, recollect, said the doctor. She was carried off, not by her own wish either. The Count swore he would marry her, and, though she did not leave him until that monster tried to poison her, yet think what a fine Christian spirit the poor girl has shown. She forgives him as heartily, more heartily, I am sure, than I do Mrs. Gore for turning her adrift in that wicked way. The reader will perceive some difference in the doctor's statement and ours, which we assure him is the true one. But the fact is, the honest rector had had his tale from Mrs. Cat, and it was not in his nature to doubt, if as he had told him a history 10 times more wonderful. The reverend gentleman and his wife then laid their heads together, and, recollecting something of John Hayes's former attachment to Mrs. Cat, thought that it might be advantageously renewed, should Hayes be still constant. Having very adroitly sounded Catherine, so adroitly, indeed, as to ask her either she would like to marry John Hayes? Comma, that young woman had replied, no. As he had loved John Hayes, he had been her early, only love, but she was fallen now, and not good enough for him. And this made the Dobbs family. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.